Greetings, loved ones. This is DJ Nasty Nexus coming to you live and direct from CFRC 101.9. I'm here to bring you the goods from my new show, Classless Radio, airing every Friday night at 11 p.m. I'll be giving you hits and hidden gems all the way from jazz to blues and hip-hop and R&B. Music from the soul that everybody needs. Hop on my wavelengths and get right with the kid to kick off your big weekend. Stay tuned. I try my best just to be a man.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and you've got me for just under 60 minutes. And on today's show, you don't just have me. I've got a wake-up call with one of those musicians other musicians talk about. Christine Bougie is widely considered one of Canada's finest guitar players. She is a sought-after collaborator who spent years helping shape the sound of other artists' songs on stages and albums across the country. We're talking Bahamas, Sarah Harmer, Amy Milan, Jen Grant, Matt Anderson. The list goes on and on. But she's also an artist with a singular voice of her own. And her new album, How to Care for Introverts, brings that voice front and center. The record is built around the expressive sound of solo lap steel guitar. It is beautiful, spacious, atmospheric music. In our conversation, Christine talks about discovering jazz as a teenager, the encouragement she once received from guitar legend Bill Frisell, and why stepping out front as a solo artist can feel both exciting and a little uncomfortable for someone who's made a career as a side player. We also talk about embracing imperfection in the studio and the creative power of making space. But before we get into our chat, let's hear some music. From Christine Bougie's How to Care for Introverts, this is Latchkey on When We Wake. From an album that released January 30th of this year called How to Care for Introverts, that is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Christine Bougie with Latchkey. Now to my chat with
Christine Bougie. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What you drinking? That's a tiny blue cup.
Yeah, little espresso.
Yeah, either that or you have very large hands.
But Right.
Which would be good for playing guitar, I guess, in some ways.
That's true. Guitar fingers.
Yeah, that's right. Different than piano fingers, eh? In what way?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. People always used to say I have piano fingers. Like, if you look at pictures of me as a little kid, they're... Yeah. they're like just as long.
Okay, so. Right. Okay, the rest of your body just grew into your hands.
Yeah. I think it's good to have long fingers for playing, you know, whatever instrument you need to get around something.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, I just don't have I don't know. I think my fingers might be long, but I just don't have the dexterity.
Do you play guitar? Or
I play guitar. I can't tell Christine Bougie I play guitar. I play guitar. I write songs. You know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah. Right.
You're a hell of a guitar player, and you play guitar with a multitude of people, many of whom are pals of mine, and speak so highly of you and your playing, but also just Christine Bougie as a person.
Oh, that's nice.
That goes the distance, I think. You gotta be a good person, before all else, I think.
For sure. Yeah. You don't want to play music with someone who's not a nice person, but sounds good. Almost doesn't really make sense that someone would play well and not be, you know, a decent person.
Do you think? Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, do you think that's true?
I mean, maybe. I feel like I could maybe sense that from someone, like the way someone would play. It is so much about your whole experience. So if your vibe and experience is, you know, not that great, you think that would kind of come through the music a bit. I don't know. Maybe that's a bit too heady about it, but I mean, it's a feeling. It's maybe.
So, I mean, the music and the person, intertwine.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to relate that to, I've spent much of my career, much of my, creative life acting. You can sort of smell it as well on the actors.
Yeah. You do theater, right?
I do a lot of theater, some TV, film.
Nice.
How did you know that? You say you do theater. How did you know that?
Well, I'm on tour right now with Matt Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
And Josh Van Tassel.
What a guy.
And Kyle Kunjacker in the band. And I was talking to Kyle about talking to you today. So
oh, cool.
He was giving me some background on you.
Uh-oh. Yeah. And what did he say? You're here.
I mean, just that. Yeah, just that.
I thought I was going to log on to a note. Sorry, Andrew couldn't make it. No. Spoke to Kyle. That's
good
fun.
Things.
Right, because you played on Matt Anderson's most recent album, The Hammer and the Rose. Right.
Yep.
Now, was Afy in that session as well? Was it just like this incredible session of like Josh Van Tassel, Kyle Kunjacker in the rhythm section, Christine Bougie, Afy Yervinen? Was Aaron Como in that session?
Yes, Aaron played
Matt Anderson,
keys.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
My God. What was that
like?
Yeah,
Josh, it was great. Josh put that together. It was kind of his whole concept to record Matt like in a way that he hadn't been recorded before, which was really like quietly live off the floor in Matt's kind of home studio with no headphones, like, you know, that quietly that we didn't need to be doing that. And we could just hear each other in the room on acoustic guitars, like very lightly playing. And obviously Matt's voice is so big and powerful. Mm. So he's being captured in the room while we're playing like soft acoustic instruments. But it was awesome. I love recording like that. And Josh and I have done a few albums in that way now. We did Jen Grant's record, which is coming out next month, I think, in a similar way, like not wearing headphones, sitting in a room with some of the same band. Kyle's on bass for that, too.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just such a refreshing way to play music, especially since there's so much album recording now is remote, you know, and people are just, I spend a lot of time recording myself at home alone and, you know, emailing off the tracks to people and they do whatever they do with it. So yeah, it's very refreshing to play that way. And yeah, to play with Matt. I mean, the songs are awesome and all the playing is super great.
What happens when you're just playing on your own, like sending, you know, tracking on your own and then sending it off like that? What's it feel?
I also like that. It's different. Mm-hmm. Like, it's nice because you kind of get to produce yourself.
Yeah.
And I like both. You know, I mean, it depends who I'm working with, but it's nice to, I don't know which one, if I would want to do one exclusively over the other. Like, you know, it's nice to take time with a song. And if someone sends me one song, I might spend a few days kind of focused on it as opposed to, you know, 1 hour in the studio and that's it. But then sometimes there's a magic that happens when you only let yourself have an hour with a tune and someone looking at you as you're playing and you can't, you know, stop halfway through or whatever. But I do. And I do like being at home, or I have a little studio space that I work out of, and just taking time to record something, build on an idea, take a break, come back to it the next day.
Right.
It just gives you, more ideas, I guess, to play with. But
I've heard you talk about that notion of working on something and then taking a break. Even if, correct me if I'm wrong, what I took away from it at least was, even if you haven't quite hit the wall yet, and it's not like you're taking a break because I'm like, I gotta step away so that my brain can work, on its own and I think about something else. There's a point where you would prefer to actually just work and then take a break regardless,
right,
and then come back at it.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's just healthy for your brain. It's like if you're doing a crossword puzzle or something, mm-hmm. and you feel like you can keep going and you're working on something and you're really into it and you're in the zone or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you do, force yourself to take a break, suddenly you come back to it and then you just see the answer, you see the solution. Sure. I feel like that's the same with music. It's good to, it's hard to do because you want to keep going when you're like, now I'm into it.
Yeah.
But it's, I try to that's like a part of the process. It's like, make yourself stop, let yourself take a break and let your brain do what it's going to do when you have that time off.
How'd you come to that? Like it's hard to, sometimes it's hard to, to articulate how we arrive at a process or a belief in our process.
I mean, I don't know. Probably just trial and error of doing that and recording so much and realizing I happened to take a break at this time when I wasn't really planning to. And then something else, I just heard something differently. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the bigger perspective of working on something, like if you're working on an album and then you put it away for a while, and so you're not, because you're listening to it every day as you're making it, and you're kind of getting you're way too inside of it. If you put it away for a month and come back and listen to it, suddenly it's like it really does sound different to mm-hmm. your ears. Mm-hmm. Like you just, it's like you forget how the songs go or something, and that's helpful.
Yeah.
So if that happens on that scale, it kind of also happens on a smaller scale. Just within the day, even of working on something, you take a little bit of. And also, for me, for recording, I find it really helpful to, if I'm working on a track, I'll bounce out just the rough mix of what I've already made for, the overdubs I've already done for something, and then take it on a walk.
Cool.
Bounce it out so I can put it in my ears and walk around the block. And for some reason, it sounds so different when you're just, I don't know, it's like the stimulus of other the things that you're seeing as you're walking down the street,
sure.
What it does to your brain makes you suddenly hear something you didn't hear when you're just sitting still, or especially staring at waveforms or staring at your computer. Those little tricks and things are helpful, for recording.
Yeah, I bet. I imagine, especially when you're working solo on did on this new album. Who did you record yourself? You talk about your little studio. Did you do everything?
Right.
Is this
actually this one? Yeah, this one was a bit different because I went to Union.
Oh, you recorded at Union.
Yeah, with Chris Stringer, and he recorded me because I actually wanted. I originally planned to do it all by myself and then at my own space. But as I kind of got into it, because the concept was that I was going to record solo lap steel, no overdubs, just a live performance in the space. And
in the live room at Union, is that what you mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But originally I thought I might just do it by myself. I was like, I don't need to be in a big live room. I could just do it at my studio. Right. It's just me. But that turned out to be hard to mentally do that. It's much different for me to record a full, performance sitting alone with nobody in the room.
Yeah.
Because what I'm used to doing when I'm in my studio alone is I can stop and start and edit and overdub and fix. And I haven't really done the opposite where I'm just trying to capture a performance. It's really hard to kind of muster that energy up.
Yeah.
So
right. On your
I
own.
Changed. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. I kind of need somebody to be in the room. I need to or even not in the room. Chris Stringer was engineering, but he's in the booth, but at least to have him there listening, have anyone present.
That's really interesting. I mean, as an actor, I get it. As a theater actor, right. particularly, I'm like, I need, at a certain point, I want to get out of rehearsal, even though I have people in the room, and I want to get right. in front of an audience. So what is that for you? What did having Chris there behind the booth, or behind the glass in the booth, do to your performance?
I mean, it just gives it some kind of, like, it gives it a formality or some sort of, like,
right.
weight, you know, like, you can't just stop. You can't just kind of be sloppy. You can't, if anyone is paying attention, right, I mean, right. yeah, I mean, and I could have experimented with, you know, having more, I could have done maybe more people, like the different energies of different people would affect the music too. But, but it was nice to have, I wanted it to be like as small and solo as possible. So it was good to just have him there because I know him, I trust him. And it's not like I'm performing for him. He's just, you know,
because that changes it, like, as well.
Exactly. Yeah. If I had someone, like an audience of people right. or fans or different kind of energy or like people that don't know me at all, that would be, everything would make it different.
Did you consider that? I was going to ask. I mean, the logical sort of like progression there is like, well, if you wanted to get a sense of a live performance of it, how come you didn't do it live in front of an audience, especially if you want that, the eyes and ears on you?
I think that's a different thing for me. Like, I actually don't perform that much in that solo kind of way in front of an audience. Right. So that brings up a whole other feeling in me. So I wanted it to be kind of like I'm alone as much as I can.
That's cool. Yeah,
so that's how I did the record. In the end, I did add a couple things, some overdubs later to a couple tracks on the record, because I just kind of felt like it could use it and serve the song. Mm. But that's over top of solo performances. So the bed track of it is just like live off the floor solo performances.
Let's take a listen to one of the tunes from the album. This is the title track to Christine Bougie's How to Care for Introverts. More of my chat with Christine after this. Christine Bougie with the title track to her latest album, How to Care for Introverts. It's a solo lap steel affair that she recorded in Toronto at Union Sound with the great Chris Stringer. I'm Andrew Shaver of Clever Hopes, and Christine Bougie is my guest today on When We Wake. Now back to our chat.
Do you think that there is something inherently introverted about a side player?
I think so. I mean, maybe there's a connection between being introverted and being, like, in the supporting role of a band or in music. I mean, it makes sense that you'd think more extroverted people would be up front and leading a band. Yeah. And I'm usually in the position of supporting and being on the side. But it's not necessarily, like, I kind of find like a lot of people who do lead the band think of themselves as introverts as well.
Right.
You know, like, they're sort of extroverted in a certain context, or it comes across that way.
Right. It could be exhausting kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And there's something about being on stage too, that's like, even though that seems to people on the outside, I mean, you would know this, like it seems like that's an extroverted act for sure, just to be seen and be performing on stage. But it, because it's so, it's such a controlled environment, like, you know exactly how it's going to feel. Everything is done the exact same way night after night. When you go on stage and perform, it almost, it kind of is good for an introvert's brain maybe to, to be in the performer role.
Right.
Thank you.
And do you think of yourself as an introvert?
I do. Yeah, for sure. I feel, I'm in the sense that I guess introverts get recharged from being alone and not having the social time. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure about all the introvert extrovert stuff and what's real and not.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, it seems like people, a lot of people will say they're introverted when they seem very extroverted. And I don't, I'm kind of confused by that sometimes.
What are you? Come
on. I mean, maybe it's just that most people, people do want to recharge alone. I'm, you know, yeah, even extroverts.
Doesn't everybody at a certain point, exactly. I mean, I think I'm an extrovert and I think I need my alone time as well.
Yeah. But why would you think you're an extrovert? Like, what makes you an extrovert? Is it,
I think what makes me an extrovert is that I do get energized by being around people and in engaging with people. And sometimes that can, you know, more than one, you know, like I think I hit a point where I'm like, okay, this is too many, but I feel like it's like with every new person that gets added to it, my level of sort of energy can, not always, but can sort of increase with it relative.
Like
to
in
that.
A group, like when people are around. Yeah,
like
that's
it.
Interesting.
I like it a lot.
That's cool. Yeah, that's probably, it's almost the opposite for me. It's like one-on-one is good and that gets like, it activates me in a certain way. And then the more that get added, the kind of like the smaller I get, or I kind of go away a bit. And then I'm like, okay, now I need, like if I'm at a party, I'm definitely the person who's, I'm going to find like one person, talk to them in the corner, find another person.
Right.
I don't know how to interact with 50 people at once, but people do it.
People do it. I mean, you do it on stage. So how does one care for an introvert? Speaking to an introvert, how should you, from an extrovert to an introvert, how should we be caring for the introverts of the world?
I mean, it's probably just respecting that people have different preferences and needs and desires for space and alone time. And I, you know, I need, like, as someone who is introverted, I have to make more of an effort to connect with people and be social, probably because the default is like, be alone, be at home, be cozy, be comfortable. And I know that I need social interaction to function as well. So it's just like having balance, and maybe just it's recognizing that people are balanced in those opposite kind of polar ways, and you have to accommodate the other person within that.
Yeah, sure. Okay, fair enough. Okay, I took notes. I'll make sure that I'm adhering to those tenets as I move forward in the world. When you were a kid, you were into drawing, hey?
Before
you started playing guitar. Where did the love of drawing start as a kid? What did you love about it?
I mean, I wonder if probably it was just like the access, like as a kid, it's one of the things that you're in school and it's kind of presented to you as an option of something to do. Maybe is like, this is art. Art is drawing or painting or something. Right. And I just kind of got into that, maybe found like kind of got into my head, like this feels like the thing I'd want to pursue. I remember being just drawn to the idea of drawing for a living. Like I was like, this is what I could do forever. This is what I could do for a job. You know,
you
people
thought
do
about
this.
That as like a child, as like a 7-year-old kind of thing?
Maybe like, maybe like 8, 7, 8, 9, something like that. Like when I was into comic books, I just, I did feel like people are doing this. People are like, somebody's job is to draw these characters.
That's a great awareness for an 8 or 9-year-old about how the world operates. I mean, someone very clearly does this.
And you could just sit alone and draw all day and submit your things. And not that I would know how the job worked, but that was sort of a fantasy of like, I could do this.
Yeah. And I'm sure you could have figured it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I was just into comics and superheroes and cartoons. And this is just before I had, I guess, access to music in some way where I didn't know that could also be a thing that I was into.
Right. Because earlier you said art. This is art. Yeah. Art is drawing.
Exactly.
Like that was it. Like that's the silo.
Right.
Like the silo of art is drawing when you're that age.
Yeah.
But you knew you loved art. You knew like that's my silo.
Right.
That's so interesting.
Exactly. I mean, it could have maybe been, it could have been another form of art that grabbed me, but it was like, oh, maybe I'm just recognizing like I'm an artist or this is how I want to spend my time and energy and focus.
That took me years. I'm still working on that. I had no, I thought I was going to make nature documentaries. I was going to be a vet. I was going to play baseball. I was going to be a radio announcer. You know, I was all over the place right up until like last week. Come on. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible.
Well, when did you get into acting?
I didn't really start until university for real. Like I did one play in high school I guess it depends how we define acting. Like, I got into performing, being a clown a bit. The love of performance and an audience prior to the play that I did in grade 12. But I did the play, went to an all-boys school, and I did the play to, like, you meet, because the girls' schools come and do the plays with us. I was like, I'm on a hockey team, and that's cool, but I also want to do...
Yeah.
And, I created a real problem for my hockey team because opening night of the play, what opening night. It was the first game of the playoffs, and I just told my coach, who was my history teacher, I was like, I'm not going to be able to make the game. It's opening night of the play. He's like, well, that doesn't matter. You're not going to the play. And I was like, I don't think that's the way it works.
Yeah.
Mr. Verno, I think I got to go to the play. Yeah. And I did, and I got an earful for sure.
It showed you where, that's where your priorities were, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you were imagining yourself writing or drawing and creating comics. And what were your comics? Like you were talking about superheroes, but like what else were you reading?
I think it was very shallow, my understanding of what that would be. And I when I would make comic books at that age, 10 years old or younger, I wouldn't even make comic books. I would just sort of like draw a cover of a comic,
Right.
And it was very surfacey. The instinct to create something artistic, and it goes for music too, where it's like you kind of start from the outside in. It's like the earlier you are with some art, you're really just thinking about like what the cover of the comic looks like, what the whole album of music kind of like looks and feels like, rather than getting actually into the deep content.
And feels like it looks like
I think so. I mean, maybe with music it would be different. Like you might be thinking about, I don't know, like how would it be with music? I guess it's like imitation, like the first way that I engaged with music was to just literally imitate, like lift and copy existing music. I would just put on tapes and CDs or whatever and play along and play it note for note, and then maybe record myself playing those, like recreating a song note for note.
Right.
And with visual art, maybe it was sort of the same. You're tracing, you're copying, you're just sort of thinking about the way it looks on the surface.
There is a surface element there to the music, a visual surface element.
If you're
learning note for note a thing that already exists and not looking necessarily at that point, the purpose of it is not to go any deeper or to bend here or bend there. It's actually just to trace the song.
Exactly. Because you just can't even think of what it takes to create something from scratch. Like I think it's like a natural progression to go from the outside in that. Like you imitate and you copy until you start to develop your own voice with whatever the art is. And then you are on the inside and then you're kind of going the other way,
Well, let's have a listen to Christine Bougie and the incredible voice that she has developed specifically on the lap steel guitar. From her most recent album, How to Care for Introverts, this is Christine Bougie with Candy Isle. More of our chat after this.
I'm Andrew Shaver, and my guest on today's episode of When We Wake is guitar player extraordinaire Christine Bougie. That was a track from her most recently released album, How to Care for Introverts, called Candy Isle. And just before that, Christine was telling me how she learned to play, copying the voices of the other greats that came before her on the instrument. As we pick up our chat here on When We Wake, I asked Christine Bougie how she began to develop her own voice on the instrument.
Even the earliest experiences I had with playing guitar and learning to play guitar, alongside imitating things and lifting in that way, I was also making up my own stuff and trying to like create at the same time, because I think I did have that urge to make something new. So I think that was always there. And if those two things are happening at the same time, you're learning and imitating and, you know, walking in the shoes of other artists.
Yeah.
As you're also like, okay, well, I'm going to try to write my own tunes as well.
Right.
That kind of just, they develop at the along the same time. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was jazz pretty early on for you. Hey, like in high school, and then you went to Humber. Is that right?
I went to Humber. Yeah. I think I got into jazz really through when I was a teenager. I used to go to the library and get out CDs, and in those days you could like take out 10 CDs a week or whatever it was, and that was a good, you know, pre-internet times. So that's how I would check out new music, new to me music, old music.
How would you choose those 10 CDs?
Well, I guess when I think about that time, there's always some like small seed that comes from some friend or somebody.
Yeah.
Would give me something like something to start with. Someone kind of influential, a friend who would be like, hey, you should check this out. And one of those records that I remember clearly is Joni Mitchell's Shadows and Light, the live, I think it's 1979 or 80 or something. I don't know what I knew about Joni Mitchell at that time, but somebody lent that CD to me, and that CD contained, or that album contained, like a lot of elements of jazz, because there's Pat Metheny, Jaco Pastorius, all these jazz musicians. And I kind of like took that to the library and, you know, just read the personnel in the back and went, okay, well, Pat Metheny, I'll check this out, get a couple of his CDs. And yeah, that was sort of like a pivot point for me, like that record. And I was like, oh, like jazz can be something that connects with, you know, pop, folk, whatever music. Which I was more into, because I didn't have, there wasn't anything in my background that was getting me into jazz before that.
Yeah.
So that kind of led me there through like 70s, 80s music. And then, I went to a high school that had a really good, like big band jazz program. And that sort of got me more into like the history of it.
That's cool. That was in St. Catharines?
Yes, in St. Catharines. Yeah.
Now, there came a point in your career where you met, I think it's maybe safe to say, I mean, he's a legend. Could we talk about Bill Frisell as one of your heroes?
Yeah, for sure.
I've heard you speak about the meeting Bill at the Banff Center.
Yeah, the Banff Center for the Arts. I went to, so after I finished Humber College, maybe the year after, I went to the Jazz and Creative Music Workshop that they do there every year in the spring. And it's a 3-week program. I don't really know what it's like now, but this was, you know, 20 years ago. And Bill Frisell was there with Dave Douglas is running the program. And Bill was currently in his band that he was, the newest album he was working on. So for a week of that 3 weeks, Frisell was there and did some master classes. And then, yeah, we got to have, you could just kind of like sign up to have a one-on-one and cool. Play with whoever. So I kind of had sort of a guitar lesson, more of just like a jam. We just sort of played tunes, and he just had a stack of papers of charts of tunes. And I had my own, and we kind of took turns playing for an hour. And that was really, yeah, I think I was 24-ish years old. And just kind of on the cusp of like, I had some songs that I was writing and thinking about like, I'm going to make a record. Yeah. And that, like playing with him and playing my songs with him and having him play on them, was very encouraging. And like that bit of encouragement helped me to get my first record together. And
wow.
Yeah, very, very cool. Really down to earth guy. And Yeah, it was cool. Like for a couple of years too, we exchanged emails and we would keep in touch, and I felt very encouraged by that.
Have you been able to play with him subsequent to that?
I haven't. Yeah, I've like gone to see him a couple times, mm-hmm. but we haven't played together. But that would be cool to do one day. I mean, I should pursue that at some point.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was really beautiful. It's such a wonderful story. But the way you framed it, that you said sometimes, you know, you need a push from someone you respect. And
yeah,
Bill Frisell
exactly.
gave you that push. And then you went on to say you hope that you're giving the push to other people. As
right.
well.
I know. I have to remember that, like what it feels yeah. like when someone right. does that, because
we
it can
do.
Change the whole trajectory of your life. Like he literally was like explicitly like, you should make an album, like you should do this. Don't wait to do. It seemed like he was kind of he was really intentional about like, I'm going to give you advice right now, mm-hmm. Unsolicited advice. And so, yeah, I mean, I have some guitar students here and there and that are younger teenagers. And I try to remember like,
right,
this is how time feels for them is different how it feels for me.
In what way? What do you mean by that?
Like when you're, I guess, just younger and the younger you are, the more time feels, I don't know, like stretched out or something. And like a year in the life of a 10-year-old is so much bigger than the year in the life of a 45-year-old.
That's it. Dog years. It's kid years.
Yeah,
really,
exactly. And yeah, right. And like if you're 17, 18 playing guitar, it's similar. Like those years are long and they have so much in them. And there's mm-hmm. so much that can happen within that to like change the course of, even if it's just like a little shift in what you're going to do. It's
often
like,
that's all it is. A little
yeah.
shift.
A little shift and then taken yeah. out 10 years later, it's like, whoa, if that's I didn't do that right. thing at that time, right. I'd be in a whole different place. So
huh.
it's important. I try to remind myself too, like if I notice somebody doing something that has the potential, like this person could be a musician, you know,
right.
I should.
Right.
encourage them and let them know that like they have the thing and they should pursue it.
I love you know? That the thing. What
yeah.
what is that thing that like ephemeral sort of the taste that people you have or you don't?
I mean, I think just it's if you can recognize it if you are aware of what that is and you have some of that
yeah.
in yourself. It's just like a gift for whatever the art form is and music, like I can just hear that. You can hear that in someone who plays guitar for the very first time or, you know, the first couple weeks of them trying to play guitar. You can just tell like,
really? That's so interesting.
I think so.
Why? How is that?
I don't know. It's like a sense of maybe like technically it's like I'm hearing a ability to play rhythmically. Like it's not like they're trying to struggle to like get this rhythm or get their hands to move this way. Like you can just, even if there is a physical struggle, you can tell that they're in their mind and body.
Yeah, yeah.
They know what they're trying to hear
sure.
and they just need to connect their limbs to make that happen. Yeah. I don't know. You just kind of sense that, but it is, even take music away from it. It's just when you connect with any other human in the world, you can feel like, oh, this person, like I just, there's some soul connection. There's something right. here and they have that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know you had that thing? Or did you like, does one develop this thing? Is one born with this thing? Like where's the thing come from? And did you know you had the thing as a kid?
I think I knew that I had some natural ability with music, but of course you have to develop it. Like right. It could have just stopped there. I mean, maybe that thing was present with drawing and visual art too. And I could have, you know, put it all into that and pursued that. But I think, yeah, maybe some people are born with a little bit like with a bend toward being artistic. Like,
yeah.
And others are, you know, have a different kind of brain and they're set on a different path. So I think I just recognized I like art and it's like, I'm pretty good at it. Like I can do it. So yeah.
Pretty good at it. So I can get better.
Yeah, exactly. Then if I put the time into it, cool. then I can do something with it.
Right. Yeah. What about now? Like, what do you do to challenge yourself and, you know, and progress?
I mean, I'm just always thinking about what kind of music I want to make next. I was sort of like making a lot of ambient music and getting deep into that sort of textural world. And I mean, before this, the last record I did, which was like sort of a departure from that a bit, in that it was no textures, no layers, just like just lap steel alone. So I've kind of been like swaying between, I don't know if you call it maximalist or whatever, where you're layering a lot of things and then like going, oh, actually, maybe I'll just strip it down and do the essential thing. So I don't know. I'm always just kind of thinking of like, what's going to push me to grow next?
Yeah.
Right now I'm on tour with Matt Anderson and playing lap steel exclusively. Like I often play guitar and lap steel on a gig. Yeah. And this is all lap steel for me. I'm just, you know, 2 hours of playing lap steel every night.
How's that feel?
It's cool because that, so this is like a challenge and this feels like it's focusing me on this instrument in a certain way. Yeah.
And I imagine you're seated for, as opposed to when you play guitar, electric guitar, are you standing often?
Yeah, totally.
Well, that changes things.
Oh, totally. I'm just sitting the whole time. And yeah, all the technical stuff involved with just playing lap steel all night, I haven't really done it that much, like repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And so that's when this tour was coming up, I was thinking, you know, this is going to be a chance for me. It's a challenge for me to like develop my steel playing in a different kind of way, where it's not just me alone, like twiddling around on my steel, making whatever cool sounds I want. This is like perform on the lap steel, play a lot of solos, play louder, like kind of just push my skills a bit with that.
Right.
So yeah, I'm always just looking for whatever is kind of in front of me. It's going to probably present some kind of challenge.
Yeah, sure. When you're playing these solos with on the lap steel with Matt Anderson night to night, are they changing?
I guess there's like, there's a development that happens. You, if you play, you know, 10 shows in a row, when you kind of have the same spot to solo and improvise you know, the first few, or maybe you're just like all over the place because you don't know what you're doing. And then you start to go, oh, this is kind of a cool like theme. Maybe I'll start here. Maybe I'll end here.
Right.
And then within that, night after night, you can kind of, it's like you're composing a solo over month maybe of gigs, which is really cool. You don't really get to do that in the studio. You know, you're sort of like, well, I'm going to try it three times that's it.
Right. I'm going with number two, unless we're comping one and three.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is usually when you're on the road and you play a song so many times, then you think, oh, now we should record it because now it's now we really know it. But there's, you know, there's benefit to both approaches. But yeah, I think I'm developing things and kind of like adding on to what worked maybe the night before. And and then sometimes, you know, one night you're just like, I'm not even going to reference anything I've done before. I'm just going to go for something else. Cool. So it's always like, there's always the open possibility to do whatever you want. Right. I mean, you are improvising within some barriers, but.
Is your instinct naturally, and I imagine this changes, but I ask it because I can recognize something in myself in the question I'm about to ask. Is your instinct to do more or less to begin with?
I think less. I think my instinct is less. It's harder for me to play like busy and play a lot of notes and or like generate like a lot of energy and excitement off the bat with something. Right. So I'd prefer to kind of build and let things have space. It's harder to do. I mean, it's hard to like just let there be space.
Why is it harder for you to let things have space?
I mean, you just have to be comfortable, I guess, with the idea that maybe some people are they're not going to be interested, or they're like, nothing's happening.
Yeah, you know, like that, hey, inner critic, hey, nothing's happening. Gotta dance. Gotta give them something.
And people are, you get like a real feedback from an audience. Right. Like if you want to just be really loud and like play high, play loud right off the top or something, people will respond to that because people, I don't know. It's just sort of human that they're like, they get excited about those types of things, but I don't.
Right.
And so I'm like, I don't want to play to that like way of that reaction is like, oh, I should play faster. I should play louder. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of be able to handle how uncomfortable it is to maybe be like not pleasing everybody in an audience or your band or whatever, to like, you know, maintain your own sense of integrity, I guess, authenticity of like the way that you want to play music and express and be heard and like contribute to the overall sound.
Was there a pivot point for you in that regard as well, or has this always been your progression as a player? Always start and build up.
I think I've always been sort of like that. Yeah, I've never been a different type of player that I had to change that approach.
Right.
I think I've been, maybe more of a slow burn kind of solo. Any of those skills that I've developed have come slowly and naturally from just performing over time.
Here's one with a gorgeous slow burn from Christine Bougie's How to Care for Introverts. This is Phantasm. We'll be back with the conclusion of my chat with Christine Bougie after this. Were you able to close your eyes while listening to that one? Holy moly. My guest on today's episode of When We Wake is Christine Bougie. That was the track that closes her most recent album, How to Care for Introverts. It's called Phantasm. I'm Andrew Shaver of Clever Hopes, and as we get back to the conclusion of my chat today on When We Wake with Christine Bougie, I ask her, why an album of solo lap steel?
I just kind of thought like it would be cool to hear what the steel sounds like, and it would be a challenge to, like we're saying, like it's uncomfortable to have that space. It's really exposed, it's really vulnerable to just not have any accompaniment, and you can hear imperfections like the buzz of the amplifier, like things that are kind of, you would want to edit out, can't be masked by anything when it's just lap steel alone. And lap steel alone, because it's like an electric instrument, like an electric guitar, there's a lot of like bits of noise and things that they get kind of covered up when it's like in a band. And so, it was challenging just to let that be what it is and be like, that's enough. Like, you can have that be exposed. And I mean, I like to hear that in other players. It's hard to, like, when it's you, it feels like this is too exposed and it's not enough and you need to fill it up. But I would love to hear every other great performer that I know. Exactly. And the imperfections are what then you like about it. And you want to hear that.
Yeah, you're not feeling what they're feeling in that moment of imperfection. Right. You're just enjoying the imperfection.
I mean, it makes it seems right, and it's human, and that's there's something, and you know, like there's so much there's AI music and weird stuff happening now, and so it's also kind of I felt like it's cool to put something out that is like very opposite of that.
Right.
This is like a human being playing imperfectly in a room, and that's it.
So there's an awareness of that in the motor behind the
a little bit. Yeah, it was not like I didn't start thinking that way, and that wasn't the idea. Yeah. But as I was working on it and putting it out, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool to put something out in this time, in this way.
Yeah. How'd you go about writing these songs?
I don't know. Like I sometimes just start with like a kind of a groove, like a bed of some sort of maybe just chords or like something that I'm noodling around with on, on the steel. I might like record that and then think about a melody that can go on top. But I don't know. I sort of like when I feel like I need to get some music out, I set aside time to just sit and push myself to go like, just play something, like whatever comes out. I mean, when you're, if I'm performing and I'm on stage and just doing a sound checks day after day, and you're kind of sitting and just noodling on your instrument, you kind of just come up with stuff because you're playing it. And so I think if you can make yourself do that in those, in the times when you don't have to, when you're at home and you could be doing anything, it's like, well, just try something, something will come out, you know, and it's going to be like sort of a culmination of things you've been absorbing and listening to and since the last time you made anything, you know. So
that's a daily thing for you.
I mean, not daily, daily and like within seasons, maybe. Like right now I haven't been writing anything for months,
and that's normal for you. You're not worried, that doesn't worry you, for example?
No, because I think there's stuff there. Like when it's time, when I want to set aside time to do that, there'll be stuff.
Is it always this time of year, this season, or does the season change where you're fallow?
I mean, often I don't. Well, actually, it's kind of the opposite. Usually at this time of year would be when I do maybe write some music, like in the beginning of the year, in the winter kind of months when there's not a lot of work. Like people usually aren't touring as much. Like I just happen to be touring a bunch in this month, and that's unusual. So I often would set aside this time to actually write some music, but now it's been taken up with a different kind of energy. So I'll probably get to that season for myself later.
Okay. Do you like being on the road? Is that a fun life?
I do. Like, I don't like to be away from, you know, home and routine that much, but I like traveling and just the kind of like variety of that and connecting and like developing a thing with a band and really like, you know, honing the show. And I do. I like it, but I like a balance because I do like to be at home and at my own studio and like having more routine in my life.
What else do you love? You love music. Very clearly you love music. What else do you love?
I love music. I love just, I don't know. What do I love? I love hanging out, reading, hanging out with my cat. Just got a Nintendo Switch. Playing some video games.
You like games?
I'm just trying. I'm reconnecting with like the old like 80s games and Mario that are kind of like still in there.
And they are the I just recently did that on the Switch as well. I'm like, oh yeah, the muscle memory is there actually.
It's wild. It's like 30 years ago, and it's just still in my thumb. Totally. So.
Well, look, Christine Bougie, it's really great to be able to chat with you. Nice to meet you. After having listened
to you for years now, and heard talk of you. It's nice to meet you over Zoom, at least.
Yeah, you too.
It's really beautiful. Congratulations on a great album.
Thank you so much.
Christine Bougie. Her new album, How to Care for Introverts, is a splendid piece of music. Five songs. Solo lap steel. The first time I heard it, it immediately evoked Bill Frisell for me. Specifically his Nashville album. I have a bit of a history with that album. I was once a student at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, and the night of the ice storm in, I don't know, when was that, 97, 98? I was in my room drinking magic mushroom-infused tea, don't you know? And listening to that album for my first time, Bill Frisell's Nashville, that is. And by the time I finished my tea, the walls were waving. I walked outside and I got smacked in the head with a falling branch within seconds. Then I went for an ill-advised walk to see what was going on. Got escorted home by the Kingston Fire Department. ChristineBougie.com for more info. I'm at The Andrew Shaver or at When We Wake Radio on Instagram. Our theme song is Got You by my pal and yours, Noah Reed. Thanks for listening.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by local artist Piner called Odelia, a powerful pop rock track rooted in folk storytelling that confronts gender inequality, inherited expectations, and the radical act of self-trust. The new single arrives at a moment when conversations around women and 2SLGBTQ+ rights, autonomy, and power feel both urgent and necessary. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Odelia by Piner on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.